Good to see everyone tonight. I'm glad we're gathered again this Lord's Day. Continue our worship and study of His Word now at this time. And as Brandon had mentioned in prayer, we did start into Ruth this morning. I had mentioned that it was during the time period of the Judges, which is where our class has been at, and thought it would be good to cover Ruth here as expository type preaching and sermon to deliver that message. And we talked about it from a number of different angles, and namely, though, the providential angle and how providence is a strange thing. It's hard to pinpoint and impossible to predict. And sometimes, there could be lessons given, point one, point two, point three, point four, regarding providence, but I find it actually probably easier to describe such a mysterious thing by just reading a book where it's taking place in someone's life. And we talked about how it's normal and ordinary, and sometimes people refer to it as just kind of boring living, but it's how God works in mankind, and truthfully how He's worked most of the time with mankind, as miracles were very, very rare, even in Bible days. And usually it's after events have transpired and life has been lived and we look back on our life that we see it really wasn't boring after all. It was actually quite amazing, the various things that brought us about to where we are at our present hour and day. And we see His amazing help in our life. And so we saw here in the beginning, we didn't get all the way through chapter 2, though most of the way through chapter 2 of Ruth, and how God unfolds His providence with these two ordinary people. We see that tragedy befell them. Very, very difficult. And dark days came upon them. And they had to move. They had to go where the bread was. And so they're trying to survive. And Ruth, the younger, she's much younger than Naomi. Naomi is her mother-in-law. She says, I need to get to work. I'll find us a way in which we can provide and take care of ourselves. And she'll go to a field to glean from the field. And we mentioned that it was happened to be a field of one of the relatives. And so there's providence, right? That's not a miracle. We mentioned God didn't say turn right, then left and right, and then that's the field, right? He didn't do any of that, didn't say any of that, but His plan was unfolding unbeknownst to her. It happened to be a field of their relatives. And so we see that she finds favor in the eyes of Boaz. Boaz gives her some of the meal that they were eating from and gives her some extra barley, even tells some of the young men to let some fall from the sheaves that they were gathering so that she might be able to gather more and take home to her mother-in-law, Naomi. And so she goes home with great news, and there's hope again in this family that has had so much tragedy. So there in Ruth chapter 2 and verse 19, her mother-in-law said to her, where have you gleaned today, and where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you. So she sees what she's brought home, right? Whoa-boom, here's this big, pile of wheat and grain. She's threshed out all of this that's going on here. And she says, someone took note of you. You are blessed. Blessed be that person. Where did you go? And so she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. Wait, who? I mean, that would have struck a chord with her. She would have recognized that name immediately. Just happened to be at Boaz's field? Verse 20, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, blessed be he of the Lord, who has not forsaken His kindness to the living and the dead. And Naomi said to her, this man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives. Now, this word for close relative is actually a Hebrew term, meaning kinsman redeemer. It's the Hebrew term goel. That's what she's saying. This is the person that is a goel. A kinsman redeemer. Now, what is all of that? What does that mean? Well, an elaborate brother-in-law process was outlined in detail in Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 5 and 6. And according to Mosaical law, to regulate what happens to the brother that died and he was married. What takes place to that woman? Well, to keep the family line alive, God would help preserve himself in doing so, a people for himself, and keeping the family lives alive and the property with Israel. And so he made this law that they could take a close relative, a kinsman redeemer, to buy them back, have the field, and perpetuate a seed for that person so that when they come of age, they take the property. Well, Ruth, Elimelech's daughter-in-law, was part of this process. But given that she was only his daughter-in-law, it really wasn't an obligation. It wasn't mandated for her, per se. And so, Ruth here, you ultimately see her commitment to Naomi. What Naomi says, we're going to do. She had told her earlier on, where you go, I'll go. Where you lie, I'll lie. Your people will be my people. And so she's following this process. She truly meant what she said. I'm going to do what you're going to tell me to do. And so in verse 21, Ruth the Moabitess said, he also said to me, you shall stay close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest. Well, verse 22, Naomi says, okay, but Ruth, it is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women and that the people do not meet you in any other field. So, okay, he said he can stay around the young men, but I'm thinking about this from a woman perspective, she says. You stay close to the women, right? Now, Boaz no doubt had her best interest in mind, wanted to make sure that, you know, she would be protected, and he'd already given charge to the young men not to harm her, to touch her. But Naomi's looking at this from another process, right? More of the Levirate brother-in-law process. I don't want you messing with Tom, Dick, and Harry, okay? Don't do that. You know, let's make sure that we don't have your purity tampered with. Be wise, be smart. I care about your security. We don't want to mess up this opportunity. And so Ruth would obey. Verse 23, so she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. So again, she really meant what she said to Naomi on that lonely road to Bethlehem. And this is good advice. This would keep her pure, free from the harm of rape or anything like that that might happen, potentially happen with some of the young men. And so she takes this advice. And I'll be honest, it's sad when young girls refuse to listen to the ones that brought them into the world, the ones that have experienced life and know the pitfalls and dangers that lie in life. It happens, though, quite frequently. But not all the time. Not with godly people like Ruth the Moabite. Right? She would listen to her mother-in-law, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law, it says, till the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest. So a season has taken place, right? To the end of this harvest. And so that certainly would have given her enough time to kind of be around Boaz and the area and the women and all of these things. And so in chapter 3 and verse 1, then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, my daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you? Now Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Oh, Ruth, have you thought about Boaz? He's such a nice man. He's a relative. Did I say how nice he was? Maybe you might be a little more forward. You know? Now, what she's going to say next in this forward moment is kind of hard for a 21st century mind to kind of read this and understand it, right? Without our mind being filled with the wrong ideas. But trust me, there's purity here, and we'll talk more about it. So verse 3, she says, therefore wash yourself and anoint yourself. Put on your best garment and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. And then it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go in and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do. So this is her plan she has for her, right? It's the end of barley harvest, late afternoon to early evening. The wind rises from the sea. It'd be an ideal time to thresh out the grain, allow the chaff to blow away. And so Naomi understood all of this. They're going to eat like a later dinner, and then he'll eventually be sleepy. Here's what I want you to do. Wash, perfume yourself, right? Then go to the threshing floor. Now, washing and perfuming and nice clothes can play a part in getting a husband or a spouse one day. If you don't wash, it might be hard to find someone, right? And so it's one thing here for a lady to make herself attractive, and a totally another thing for her to make herself seductive. And that's not what she's doing here. Ladies know the difference. Men know the difference. The clothing here is descriptive of a heavy mantle, the garment that she was going to put on. There was restraint to it, almost a little air of majesty to it. Not this 21st century nonsense where flesh is just exposed all over the place. There's purity that is here. And then in verse 4, you're going to need to take note where he lies, right? You want to make sure when you go to that place, you don't uncover the wrong feet. You want to make sure it's Boaz's feet. And then when you do that, lie down by his feet, and he'll tell you what you should do. Now, some teams might get the wrong idea. Does this mean I can hang out late with my date and, you know, uncover feet here and there? No, no, no. Again, I can see why a hormone-hungry teenager might like Ruth chapter 3, but not understand it. That's not the setting. That's not the context, right? The circumstances are not the same. Further, we should abstain from the appearance of evil, the scripture says. And usually when a teen is leaving another teen's house 2 a.m. in the morning, there is going to be an appearance of evil. Someone's going to think that something was going on that wasn't very moral. And think about these parties here. You really have all parties that trust in God through this levirate process. That's what's taking place here. Really, a marriage is being arranged. You have Naomi who trusts God. You have Ruth who trusts God. And you have Boaz that also trusts God as well. Again, that's not taking place today when a couple of teenagers want to hang out way into the late, early hours of the morning. Certainly not in our sexually charged society today. We need to abstain from the appearance of evil. So, that's the plan. Uncover his feet. So verse 5, what does she say? All that you say to me, I will do. There she is again. There's Ruth with her good heart to be respectful, be obedient to her mother-in-law. She understands that she wants what's best for her, to secure her. So verse 6, she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her. And after Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was cheerful, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came softly and covered his feet and lay down. Now it happened at midnight that the man was startled and turned himself, and there a woman was lying at his feet. So you can kind of imagine what takes place, right? He's asleep. He doesn't recognize that his feet have been uncovered. But as the wind keeps coming on in, his feet start to get cold. And he kind of stirs and wonders if he needs to cover his feet again. And he looks, and there's a woman that's there. Well, she wasn't there when I went to sleep. And so this was strange. And what is she doing here? And here's something else that takes place that's a little bit out of the ordinary and that's a little bit strange. She's going to propose marriage to him. So you see how this is not the same cultural circumstances, right? How many women would do that today? How many girls want to be the one proposing to the man? No. But that's what takes place. Notice what she does. How does she do it? Verse 9, he said, "Who are you?" And so she answered, "I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a Goel, a kinsman redeemer. You are a close relative. She proposes marriage to him. She requests marriage of him. And then verse 10, he realizes exactly what's taking place now. And he's befuddled. He can't believe how kind she is. She doesn't have an obligation in this, and yet she's wanting this. And he says in verse 10, "Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you've shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich." That tells us there was some age difference between these two. He was older, she was younger. I don't know if it was like a Jonathan and Emily kind of age range, you know, but there were some years apart from these two. And he acknowledges that by saying, you know, it would have made more sense if you went after some of the other men your age, you know, young men. But you weren't focused on that. You were focused on something higher, something more noble, something that's honorable. What a friend you are to Naomi, to perpetuate inheritance for her and also for you. Well, verse 11 says, though, there's a problem. "And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request, for all the people of my town know that you're a virtuous woman. Now, it is true that I'm a Goel, a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I." And so in the chain of relatives, there's someone that sits first before me. And we have to do this according to the book. We have to do things the right way. Again, this speaks to how wonderful a man Boaz is. He's not going to let his will override God's will and word, right? I need to do this in the proper means, in the proper way. Oh, that more people would be more concerned about marriage in the proper way today, right? In our lust-filled society, it's, you know, lust at first sight, and they'll marry really quickly, or maybe they find out maybe they're not supposed to be married, but they'll do it anyway. Maybe the person's married to somebody else and there's adultery, but I love the person now. And they don't care about proper order of things. They don't care about what God's will is about certain things. They just want what they want. Boaz wasn't like that. Did he want to be married to her? Oh, yes, he wanted to be married to her, but he cared about the proper ways. There is a kinsman redeemer that is closer than I. So verse 13, he's concerned about her care and make sure she doesn't get hurt in the night. Verse 13, "Stay this night, and in the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative for you, then good, let him do it. But if he does not, if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning." And so she lay at his feet until morning. And she arose before one could recognize another. And then he said, "Do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." So that almost seems like he's giving orders to a younger man, right? Escort her. Make sure that don't let it be known that the woman came here. So he cares about her, cares about her reputation, right? Wants to make sure that, you know, no one's going to think wrong about these kinds of things. And so provides most likely an escort for her so that she gets home safely. Again, purity you see through this. Verse 15, he also said, "Bring the shawl that is on you and hold it." And when she held it, he measured 6 ephahs of barley and laid it on her. And then she went into the city. Now, this is a lot of barley. Some say up to maybe 60 pounds worth of grain. So that's going to be plenty of food, right? Plenty of food in this big sack that she's having to lug and to carry. And so when she comes home and Naomi asks, "How does it go?" She can say, "Oh, real well." It went really good. All right, here's this big sack here. Verse 16, she came home to her mother-in-law. "Is that you, my daughter?" And then she told her all that the man had done for her. She told her everything. This was not a teenager sneaking out at night that didn't want to tell their parents nothing. She tells her everything. Girls, boys, beware of doing anything that you wouldn't want your mother to know about. That's a good rule of thumb. Don't do anything in your life that you can go straight home and tell your mom and dad about. She told her everything. If you follow that rule, it'll save you a lifetime of hurt. I know it may be backwards, a little prudish, but and you might even say it makes my life boring, but it will for a while, just a little while. But see here, what you see is that while he was concerned about reputation, going home before his yet morning, right? Concealment from the population was not concealment from her mother-in-law. She tells all. It's not a secret, not a fling in the night, but it was an arranging of a very, very good marriage. So verse 18, she said, "Sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out. For the man will not rest until he's concluded the matter this day." He won't rest till this is settled. This is great, right? I love this. What are we seeing here again? Just ordinary people doing ordinary work, right? Just to make sure they can eke by an existence. And the God of the ordinary is working in it and through it. Again, no miracle, no voice, no flash, no pomp. It's just providence. You're seeing providence. You see it best through some of these stories here. God's will being brought about, His plan unfolding. So chapter 4, verse 1. "Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, 'Come aside, friend, sit down here.' So he came aside and sat down." Can you imagine Boaz there? He does. He goes out that very day. He doesn't care about work that day. He's going to have the young guys take care of that. "I'm going out to the city gate. Because if I know that guy comes by the city gate around about this time o'clock, you know." And so he's there sitting, waiting for the guy to come. And sure enough, just like he thought, here he comes. And he says, "Hey, friend, you sit right there. We got to talk about some things before you leave the gate here." And then he's going to gather some of the elders. Verse 2, "He took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, 'Sit down here.' And so they sat down." And so that often, again, happens in this society, in this time, right? They would discuss these matters at the gate, pass little rulings for the community there at the gate. He wants to make sure all this is done right, done according to the book. Again, how contrary to our modern society where it's all so free. We're too free in some ways, governed by our lust and feelings and rules. Someone just say, "Hey, boys, you love her, just go for it." No. We got to do this God's way. Right? Got to do this God's way. If only people would today care about actually doing it God's way. To be more like Boaz, we would be a better nation and country. And so he meets here with Mr. So-and-so. And he begins to talk about some of the things that are taking place. Now, Boaz is smart. He knows that marriage equals duty. Whereas property or land equals opportunity. And so it's a package deal that will come together. He's aware of that. This person, he doesn't know that yet. He's not aware of all these things that have been unfolding. And so he's going to have to think about how he's going to present it to this person here. Now get in the story, right? You want Boaz to marry the girl? You're in his corner, right? He's taking a risk. It's the right thing to do, though, right? He didn't just go marry her. He would like to, but he's taking a risk. I've got to see if this guy wants to do it first. So notice, what does he do? Verse 3. He starts with the privilege of the land, the opportunity. Verse 3. "He said to the close relative, 'Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belonged to our brother Elimelech. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants of the elders of my people. If you'll redeem it, redeem it. But if you'll not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there's no one but you to redeem it, and I am next after you. And what does he say? Right? Does he mention anything about Ruth? Mention anything about the marriage? No. Here's this opportunity. It's land, right? And you can use that, and you know, you could farm it, and you know, make money from it. You don't want it? You want it? If you don't want it, I want it. You know, you gonna redeem it? And the guy says, "I'll redeem it." Oh. Now, he probably thought maybe he would say that. But we're thinking as we're reading this, oh, no, this is going not according to plan, right? But again, there's a package deal. And so Boaz says it in verse 5. Here's the marriage that equals the duty. Boaz says, on the day that you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance. See, we're not finished yet with the bargaining. I know you jumped the gun. You said you'll redeem it, but let's not swap sandals yet, right? Let's not do any of that. No. You see, there's another woman here, and you're going to have to marry. Or if you won't marry, if she chooses to marry somebody else, and they bear a son, then the property will shift to that son. You see? Oh, I didn't think about that. Verse 6, the close relative then said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it, he says. So he's saying, in essence, if it's a package deal, then I'm out. Well, I guess you're out, says Boaz. You see, if it was only the land, and that's an accruing asset, the detriment would be if the woman came with it, and he's in essence thinking, this dilutes my little empire, right? Perhaps it remains with her family, and I could be out the money purchasing the land, and then also out the land one day too. You go ahead. I cannot do it. And so verse 7, now it was the custom in these former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm anything. One man took off his sandal and gave it to the other. And this was a confirmation in Israel. Therefore the close relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. And so he took off his sandal. And Boaz said to the elders and all the people, look, you're witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahlon's from the hand of Naomi. You see, there you go. Everybody sees it. It's going to be a done deal. He is going to be the kinsman redeemer. I know all of you here are witnesses. It is ratified. So verse 10. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have acquired as my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from his position at the gate. You are witnesses this day. He's saying, I don't care about the land. I don't care about the opportunity or the prosperity of any of that. In fact, if I help it to give her a son, that name will be kept alive and that land will be theirs. Oh, what a man, right? What a blessed man. Everyone knew this was a sacrifice he was making. It wasn't about the money. He was there for love, for this marriage, to be there to help this family in time of need as well. And everyone knows it. Everyone recognizes it. And that's why they start saying these accolades and these praises. Look at verse 11. All the people who were at the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman who is coming to your house like Rachel and Leah. You know who they are, right? The two who built the house of Israel. And may you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. May your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this young woman. They say, maybe there's more to this story, right? Because here's Boaz, he's determined to do the right thing. Maybe there is a plan for all of this by God. And there was. Now, they didn't know that. They were just living their life. It was just ordinary decisions being made by ordinary people. And I started to think about what Jesus said for our lives. Seek first the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added unto you. I mean, that's what he's telling us to do. Put him first. Put first things first. Do things in the right way, and God will be with you and bless you, and his plan will begin to be furthered and carried out. You take care of my things, and I'll take care of your things. See, this is the kind of person, if you're not married, if you're unmarried, and you're eligible to be married, this is the kind of person you should be looking for. A man that can control his passions, who isn't selfish, but is selfless. He's kind, and he loves God. That's the person you need to look for. And he, like Jesus, did the right thing so that we could be redeemed, even at a cost of himself. Well, the story goes on to say, Ruth has a baby, verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he went in to her, the Lord gave her a conception, and she bore a son. Who did it? The Lord gave her. The Lord did it. Notice, the Lord gave conception. Where's life begin? At conception. It's a gift from God. There's a new person that's been made, and she bears a son. Life comes from God. That's a great verse for any that would try to advocate abortion. The Lord gives conception. Verse 14, then the woman said, Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a close relative, that is, without a goel, and may his name be famous in Israel, and may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons, has borne him. Notice, we often say, someone passes away, you can't replace them. We understand that. They understood that as well. She missed her husband. She missed her children. But the idea is that through all this darkness comes a little bit of light. What a blessing. You never thought you'd have grandkids ever. And look, there he is. Isn't he beautiful? And why do you have them? Because there was one woman that said, I don't want to go back to my people, and I don't want to go back to my gods. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. It's because of her decision that she made. Again, no miracle, no overriding influence, no powerful voice from heaven saying, this is what you need to do. She made an ordinary choice on an ordinary day. And it brought about the providence of God. So Ruth kind of fades from the scene, and Naomi is brought to view, right? And others as well, too. Did you notice this here? Verse 16, Naomi took the child, laid him on her bosom, became a nurse to him. And verse 17, also the neighbor women gave him a name. Who names the child? Well, it's a community saying there's a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. And he's the father of Jesse, the father of David. Look at that. You know, if this book was like a film, it would start off like in black and white, really gloomy, right? And over time, it would transition to color and grow ever vibrant as we approach the end, as there's this overwhelming joy, and it's shared by all. Not just that family, but even the neighbors as well feel a part of this great blessing. Boaz purchased the Moabite woman, and this cursed Moabite becomes the great-grandmother of David, a man after God's own heart. And you know, you can flip over to Matthew chapter 1, verse 5, and there you'll read of Ruth the Moabite in the genealogy of Jesus. How did a cursed Moabite get in the line of Messiah? She must have been super great. She must have been extraordinary. Just a tremendous individual. No, 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 no. She came from a cursed people, meaning she was cursed herself, and she was just as ordinary as you and I. But God gave her a redeemer to buy her back. See, Boaz is a picture of our kinsman redeemer. Jesus, who purchases us, buys us back. Redeemed, how I love to proclaim it. And he makes us his bride. And he blesses us. See, the life of Jesus is tied to the story of this girl from Moab, gleaming from a field far from home. And you ever stop to think, wow, what if she took the wrong turn that day and went to a different field? Think about that for a little bit, right? Hope it doesn't keep you up at night. But that's providence, you see. It unfolds. You see it in play in the decisions of ordinary people in ordinary life. Nothing miraculous in the story here. Just people living lives. And God uses them all. I want to just talk for just a few more minutes about the providence of God and how sometimes it could be even a good tool, perhaps, to share with others. The story of Ruth is a story that while we live our regular lives, God cares, God rules, and God provides. The message from God is not that the people who trust in me, none of their family dies, nor those who trust in me, they're never going to be poor or struggle. For Ruth was both of those, right? Lost her husband, and she was poor, looking for scraps. We must learn that our pains and our disappointments don't find their meaning here in this life alone. We have to look beyond that and to trust that God knows the plan. Like I shared this morning, that's something Mom said as she was going through her illness that would eventually claim her life. It's okay. God knows the plan. But what if I don't like the plan, right? I mean, that's the idea. Most likely we're not. Do you think if God said, Naomi, here's the plan. You ready for this? Say goodbye to your husband and goodbye to your children. Do you think she'd say, oh, I like that plan? No, I don't like that plan. But in the providence of God, he knows the plan. And it's always the right plan. It's always the best plan, though we may not understand the plan. You see, that's part of the atheist problem. They can't look past this life further because for them there's nothing else out there. To them, the lives they live are just ordinary, they're meaningless. It's the survival of the fittest, right? It doesn't have any rhyme or reason. There's cruelty, there's suffering, there's death, and we're just like the other animals. Did you know some of the brightest, most intellectual people are atheists? There have been 56 suicides at MIT over the past 40 years. One of the highest institutions of the land. 56 suicides. And I'll share you the story of one. His name was Philip Gale. One day, Philip Gale came to class. When class had dismissed, he stayed behind. And he drew up a math formula on the blackboard for what happens to a body when it falls from 15 stories. And then he threw a chair through a window and jumped 15 stories to his death. He was worried he'd be bored all of his life. It was just ordinary to him. Didn't seem to have any point. Didn't see any beauty in all the depths and sorrows and the difficulties. And he thinks, if this is all life is, I'm out. Philip knew 20 computer languages. He had a salary of over $70,000 a year before he turned age 17. And he had made over $1 million in stock options. How do you convince someone like that, that has so much accomplishments at such a young age, who could probably run circles around me intellectually? How do you convince them that there's more to life than this? For him, he just saw the end of his MIT degree, his post-grad degree, his job, and then nothing. It doesn't matter. None of it matters. We're all going to die anyway, and so might as well just go now. And so he did. What do you say to someone like Philip Gow? How about, Philip, I've got this story that takes place about 1,200 years before Christ came to earth. And in the story, tragically, people die right and left, right there at the beginning. And it seemed so unfair. It seemed so pointless. It left two women behind with no income and no food. And so they travel back home. And she, one of the women, goes to work in a field. And the thing about it, Philip, is if she goes to the wrong field, there's no story. But what do you know? She happens to go to a field of a close relative of hers. And the mother-in-law knows that. And she begins to work in favor for her daughter-in-law, that they might be married, that they might be able to provide security for her, that maybe children could be brought and blessing found. God cares, God rules, and God provides. And Philip, in all your intellectual smarts and wisdom, you have an emptiness. And it will never be filled. But have you ever considered the possibility there's a God who created you and loved you and works in you in the ordinary so that you might bring glory to Him? I'd say, well, it's just a story about people, ordinary people, yes, living daily life. And yet it's a story about God's providence and how He works in the ordinary life for you and for me, and mostly for Him. His plan. His plan. You know, I'm encouraged by a book like this because I'm an ordinary person too. I thank God that I am. I'm not going to be in a history book. I won't even be a footnote in a history book. But neither did Ruth and Naomi think they would be either, did they? And that's extraordinary. To God be the glory who works through the ordinary. I hope you've been made to see how fascinating the ordinary can be from this little story. Maybe now you have a little more faith in God and the things that you decide to do from day to day, that you recognize that it does matter, it is important, and that you further trust in God. And perhaps even remembering this story could be a little bit of ammunition against the doubters of this age. To think of more than their life, of what they're doing currently, and that it can matter if they're willing to be used for God. Before we end, I want you to think for just a moment about the beauty and symbolism and the foreshadowing in this story. Because I asked a question at the very beginning this morning, why is there a book about a cursed woman in the Bible, Ruth the Moabite? It's named after her as well. And it's because the things written before are written for our learning. These things foreshadowed a greater one to come. And so think of Boaz to Ruth as akin to us and Christ. Boaz was her Redeemer, and Christ is our Redeemer. Ruth depended upon His mercy as we depend on Christ's mercy. Ruth was covered by His garment, and we are covered by the garment of Christ, the blood of Christ. Ruth is introduced to all the peace and security of the family. And we too are introduced to all the peace and security of Christ's family. She came to Boaz a penniless foreigner. And we come to Christ as penniless strangers as well. We cannot purchase or buy our salvation. There is nothing that we can bring. Hence the song that we sang this morning, "Just As I Am." Boaz makes her his bride and calls her her own. And Christ, the great bridegroom, makes us his own. Friends, this is a real story. See that? Just ordinary story, ordinary life, real people. And it ultimately displays what Jesus will be for you and for me. And so it beckons the question to ask ourselves, have we ever cast ourselves down at the feet of Christ and asked Him to make you His own? If not, then why wouldn't you do so tonight? Based upon your desire to repent of your sins and confess faith in Christ, to be baptized into Christ, that's when He makes you His own. Raised to walk in newness of life, redeemed, then how you will love to proclaim it too. Won't you come while we stand and while we sing? My door is standing, patiently drawing near.